Welcome back to Integrative Lyme Solutions with Dr. Karlfeldt. I am so excited about the show that we have ahead of us. We have some phenomenal information that could save lives. I am Dr. Michael Karlfeldt, and with me I have my co-host,
Tanya Hobo.
You're going to need to tune in to what's going on today. The information is jam-packed, so don't step away.
So excited. Let's go ahead and get this started. Welcome to Integrative Lyme Solutions with Dr. Karlfeldt. And today I want to welcome our guest, Arabella. And I had a little sneak peek of her voice. And I need to know, where are you from? You have this accent.
Yeah, I think my accent is hybrid now, according to my friends in the UK, but I'm English, but I've been here in the States now for 18 years nearly. So
this is considered a hybrid British accent.
I think so. Because, you know, over here, everyone's like, oh, you know, what's that accent? But I go back and they're like, oh, you sound American. So, you know, it's just all mixed up now.
Oh, I love that you still have it because I love a great accent. So,
yeah, my wife was very upset, you know, because I'm from Sweden originally. And I went back.
Oh, I love Sweden. Yeah. That's a beautiful place. I've been there.
Oh, wonderful. And so I was there visiting just a few weeks ago. And I came back, and she was very disappointed. I hadn't picked up more of the accent. She doesn't like that I'm losing it.
Oh, darn. She might kick you back out, and you might have to stay longer, right?
I know.
Well, gosh. Okay. So where do we want to start, Arabella? How far back do we need to go?
I'm going to take you back to actually before I got acutely sick.
Okay.
So I became acutely ill in 2018, March of 2018. But actually, about, I don't know, maybe a month or two before that, and maybe even longer, actually, I had started having like some word-finding problems. Like my kids would be laughing, like, Mum, did you hear what you just said? You know, I'd have mixed up my words. I then started having trouble swallowing. And my food was getting stuck in my throat. And I was like, you know, what is going on? So I made an appointment to see, the gastroenterologist. And they sent me for to do a barium swallow. Now, when I did the barium swallow, obviously, you know, it showed that the food was kind of coming up and going down again. And off the back of that, I went in to review the results of that study with the doctor. And she told me something like, without looking in my eye, actually, looking at her computer, you know, you have something like an 89% of this chance of this being Parkinson's disease. So I suddenly had, you know, I'm like, well, how can this be? This is something that's come along, you know, over the last month and a half. It hasn't something that's been, you know, manifesting for this period of time, you know, and I work in healthcare. So anyway, the whole thing was extremely frightening, of course, with the, you know, that potential diagnosis. So she was like, I'm going to refer you to a neurologist, but I can tell you that, you know, and she gave me this percentage again, that's, you know, probably what's going on. And it was only I don't remember exactly how long after that, but not long. I woke up in the morning, you know, you get your kids up for school and you do the breakfast and whatever. And I said to my husband, you know, I feel really tired, but I have to go and meet my daughter's band teacher. Mum's got to get on with it. So I got up, you know, fixed kids' breakfast, went in to meet the teacher. And then I came home and I was like, I have to go back. I have to get back into bed and sleep again. Now, I wish I was a napper, but I'm not a person that can take naps. So this was really unusual for me. And then I think that evening I started having nerve pain in my right foot. And so it was kind of stuck, really severe pain in my foot, then it would stop. And then it kind of came in spasms. So we went to ER and, you know, they couldn't figure out what was going on. I'm thinking, you know, is some autoimmune condition triggered? Like, what, you know, what's going on? But it stopped. And then I got home and then it started in the other foot. So I'm like, back up ER again. Nobody can figure it out. Then it stops. And then the next day I started having like shooting nerve pain all over my body, even behind my eyes. You know, obviously this was super frightening. So I went to see my general practitioner. And I have to say that I think one thing that we all deal with is, you know, we all know there's extreme medical gaslighting initially with this condition until we all know what we're dealing with. And we kind of all end up with Lyme PhDs by the end of it, you know, but I trusted my GP, as, you know, most of us do. Went to see him and he was like, yeah, you know, playing it down. I think it's anxiety. I'm like, how can it be anxiety if I have nerve pain? And then, you know, we went home again and then I started having muscular pain. And, you know, the hallmark of Lyme, or one of the hallmarks of Lyme disease, is it moving around, that pain. And I have that. So I've been like, you know, you think you're going crazy, you know, one minute I was having pain in my, you know, my shoulder joint, you know, then it was in my wrist joint. And this went on for some time and I was going in and out of seeing the doctors. And then my knees became so inflamed. I mean, you could actually visibly see fluid. There was fluid around my ankles. I had just horrendous nerve pain going on. And I, was seeing all these different doctors. And, you know, my GP was like, you know, maybe it's fibromyalgia. I think every Lyme person practically gets that random diagnosis, you know, and sort of poking areas. Does it hurt there? And I was like, well, no, it doesn't. He was like, well, I think it's fibromyalgia. And this kind of kept going on. And I became sicker and sicker. And eventually I couldn't walk anymore. I couldn't swallow solid food anymore. I started to lose control of the side of my face. I was having, like, you know, the myoclonic seizures that you get that are sort of jerking. I was having that constantly. If you looked at my different parts of my body at different times, it was like twitching on its own. And then my right leg kind of blew up. And that was like I've given birth to two children, one without meds because she came pretty quickly. And there was nothing like this nerve pain in my right leg. And my son was like petrified. He called an ambulance. They took me in. They can't explain why it's going on. Now, there was an ER doctor that I will say, he tried to kind of start figuring out what was going on. And also a cardiologist, actually, he kind of fought my corner. They couldn't figure it out. They did a spinal tap, you know, MRI, and nothing was coming up. And, you know, and then much as, you know, we see with many other Lyme, people suffering with Lyme disease, we end up going around all these different doctors trying to figure it out. And I did exactly that. Until I went to see an infectious disease specialist in Pasadena. I saw two, actually. And one of them, he was quite kind, actually. And he said, you know, I'm sorry that this is happening to you. Because it's also not just you. There's a huge impact on your family. It caused mental health problems with my youngest child. So it was a very difficult time. And our family lives back in England. So we didn't have that sort of support around us either. And I went to see infectious disease, and the first infectious disease doctor I saw, we ended up going to see both just because we ended up with appointments for both. So we were like, why not? Let's see what they both say. We were lucky. It took us like, I don't know, 6 weeks or something to get in there. And the first doctor was not the nicer one. I believe that he had an idea of what was going on because, you know, it's not his first rodeo. He would have known, you know, about the problems with the Lyme disease diagnosis and treatment, which is, in my opinion, why they like to stay away from it. You know, it's very difficult to treat. You know, we've got CDC guidelines that don't match up with treatment and everything else and all the other political reasons too. But he did run a lot of blood tests, you know, HIV, loads of different tests. And he said to me, if these blood tests come back negative, then I cannot help you anymore. And he was asking me questions at the time, you know, where have you been? And we've been camping a lot, which is where I think I probably picked this up, camping around Shaver Lake in California. We had the blood test results. He'd actually had caught a fever when I was in his office as well. So that was kind of like, you know, clearly that can't be anxiety, you know? And my results came back at my Epstein-Barr markers came back first. And of course they were, you know, sky high and showed reactivated Epstein-Barr. So first of all, not knowing anything about Lyme disease, I'm like, well, there we go. You know, that's what it is. And he was like, well, I don't think it's that. And then I came back with a partial positive, according to the CDC, two IgM and two IgG initially. Now, I believe that when you're extremely sick like that, your body just isn't able to kind of do that conversion, you know, and because I did see over time with my Lyme literate doctor that I actually ended up with more bands as treatment went on and as I improved, actually. But so that was the case with this infectious disease doctor. We saw the other guy, infectious disease doctor, and he agreed to do some IV antibiotics. So I started on IV antibiotics and there was some improvement. I couldn't swallow the pills or anything, you see, at the time. So that made treatment kind of difficult. I did improve. But of course, then there was like, okay, you've had your antibiotics, you know, that's the end of it. But I was still incredibly sick. You know, I was still bedbound. They didn't warn me about Herxheimer reaction. So when I first started treatment, I thought I was going to die, you know. And so we then didn't really know what to do. And one of my good friends here said, you know, I think you should speak to a girl that she worked with in the media world. She's moved to the East Coast, but she's a Lyme advocate. So I spoke to her and she recommended three doctors. And so I called, I did my reviews. Everyone looked like they had great reviews from patients and went to see her. And when I got into, is it okay to mention my doctor?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So Restoration Healthcare in Irvine, and my doctor's Dr. Raleigh. And I also saw Dr. Bateman to begin with. You know, I was like wheeled in. I couldn't walk, you know, and they said at the time, you know, give us 9 months. We'll help you. You're going to start feeling better. It was the first person that had given me any kind of hope. They had reviewed all my bloods before I got there. They were extremely organized. He also sat me down for like, I don't know, an hour or longer and went through my whole medical history. We could see there was already immune dysfunction before I got sick, and kind of built this picture. And then they started me on, I'm cutting out bits, right? But they started me on multiple antibiotics different supplements. They checked all my hormones, made sure that my hormones were optimal. I have Hashimoto's. So they changed all my thyroid meds and kind of figured all of that out. I did skip one bit, actually. Before I went to see this doctor, I also was sent to USC Neuromuscular department. This is when they were trying to figure out what was kind of going on. And I took my Lyme disease diagnosis with me, you know, half diagnosis, to see the a lady there at USC. And they were, because infectious disease, even though they treated me with these antibiotics, were still trying to deny it. We don't really think it is, because you wouldn't still have the IgM. You know, that would be gone. You know, the whole story that many of us have gone through. And so not knowing what I know today about Lyme disease, I was like, you know, confused. Is it like what's happening to me? At random times, I would suddenly stop being able to like lift my arm, you know, and that accompanied with the swallowing problems did seem very neurological. I also had a period of time where I actually forgot that I'd eaten. So I ate my food and then I was like, you know, when's dinner ready? And my kids and my husband were like, oh, okay, scary. You know,
oh, you forgot. You forgot you have a full belly. Wow, like, that's a big one.
Eaten. Yeah, it was a complete, really incredibly frightening. So I was sent to USC for them to assess me for neurological disorders, for ALS was one of them. And I, you know, could do all the different tests that they asked me to. I didn't have foot drop or, you know, any of those things. But she did then do a skin punch biopsy on my leg, with the leg that had kind of, you know, extremely painful with the nerve problem. And she diagnosed small fiber neuropathy. And she looked at the Lyme disease results and she was like, you know, why don't you go in and see our Lyme disease clinic? So she contacted the Lyme disease clinic and she said, and this is at USC, and they wouldn't see me. So they, you know, and I couldn't understand at the time, you know, why wouldn't they see me? I tick every box, and from the symptoms point of view, you know, I have a partial test. We don't have any other reason for all of this, but they didn't see me. So that's how I ended up, you know, contacting the Lyme disease advocate and then going to see my doctor at Restoration Healthcare in Irvine.
Did they not give you a reason why they wouldn't see you?
No,
I mean, obviously, it's a Lyme Center clinic, so they do treat it. That's very odd. No,
because I didn't have a fully positive test.
You weren't CDC positive. Okay.
Right. I'm not CDC positive. I mean, this was 2018. Whether or not things have changed enough yet, I don't think so.
It seems to be the same story, you know, wherever you go. Yeah,
exactly. And, you know, and I heard it on your podcast. And I, you know, my give back, because a Lyme advocate helped me, is I've probably had hundreds of people over these last 4 years that have reached out to me because I'm active in the groups, because I want to tell other people, because people feel very hopeless that, you know, you actually can get well. It is a journey. And I think we don't fully understand these pathogens, you know, so it's not, you know, one thing fits all, but we can share ideas to the point that we start formulating. And that's what I'm seeing, really. And I'm sure you are too. We're formulating our own ways to treat this. So I took antibiotics the first time. I was like, gosh, on 4, I think, and then pulsing a 5th. I was taking herbals, and I gradually got, you know, better and better. And I then hit, my doctor was like, you know, I want you to remain stable for at least 3 months before we start withdrawing the antibiotics. Stay on the herbals. You know, she gave me all the great advice. And, you know, you have to maintain like your healthy diet. And so I did all that. We took one out at a time, and then we'd wait for a while, and everything held, and I was doing well. I then made the mistake, and I will never make this mistake again, that I pretty much stocked everything. You know, I have to be really honest and take that on the chin. I thought, you know, I'm doing well. I actually eat really well anyway. You know, I cook from scratch, I eat loads of vegetables, you know, free range, organic, wild, whatever, meats. And so I naturally eat that way, and I was taking the odd supportive supplement, but that was it.
So what did the supplements and herbals, I mean, what did they look like? You did the antibiotic, and then, but what did all the kind of the natural agents around that look like?
Yes. Before, I got in to see my doctor when I knew I had the Lyme diagnosis, but I had this kind of period of time of trying to figure out how I was going to help myself, because I'd been, you know, almost dropped by infectious disease really at that point. Somebody told me about the Stephen Bunner book. And so I got some of the Bunner herbs and I started doing, you know, knotweed and the Bunner herbs myself. Didn't really, if I'm honest, notice any difference at all with that initially. The first time I did MCBB1, they also had me on knotweed, turmeric, they were very focused on like cellular health as well. You know, I think it's phosphatidylcholine.
Yeah, phosphatidylcholine.
And, you know, they were looking at sort of cellular health, you know, making sure I was taking like high dose fish oils. I mean, they really did look at everything, you know, right down to, you know, I guess how my, you know, my gut, like they did the whole thing. They are functional medicine doctors. And so they really tend to be, you know, not looking at sort of, you know, one organ, or, you know, they look at you as the whole person, which I think is important for Lyme disease. There's multiple things going on. She also put me on low dose naltrexone, which took my Hashimoto's antibodies that had always been sky high. Nobody had ever told me about Ardienta, barely detectable. I feel like using some kind of immune modulator, whether that's herbal or low dose naltrexone, is important for this disease. And, you know, having that immune modulation is part of getting well, in my opinion. And so I took low dose naltrexone. And then, you know, gradually I stopped everything, basically. And so, unfortunately, then my father had cancer and died. And, you know, that was like a really traumatic time. And I went back to kind of, you know, basically nurse him in those last few weeks. And it was really a very difficult time. My daughter was suffering a bit with mental health, you know, life stuff that we all sadly have to deal with at one point. You know, I was working for Kaiser Permanente here, a hospital, and it was a really high stress job. It was only part time, but it was still like incredibly, you know, no lunch, you've got to try and drink a shake type of just, you know, 5 patients at once, and just ended up relapsing. And I started having, first of all, hip problems. I was like, you know, what's going on with my hip? Should have guessed, but I didn't. I went to see a doctor and they put me on steroids. Oh, no. I know. Why didn't I realize? And so, and then after that, all hell broke loose again, really. And I started getting sick again. And I was not like I was the first time when, you know, I really feel that if my doctors had not helped me, I really honestly feel like I would have died. You know, I was that ill, couldn't really, I mean, I was dropping weight, like, you know, really skinny, and just incredibly sick. And so I had a whole year of remission, but now I've been treating again for, gosh, what is it now? I started treating of March last year.
So when you're treating again, what does that look like? I mean, is it just kind of doing the same thing that you did before?
Yeah, so
or
my doctor, you know, like a lot of you guys, is very good at sort of keeping up with, you know, the latest, you know,
latest, greatest, newest finds. And yeah, there's always something, right?
Following Zhang and Eva Zappi and all of those researchers from the universities that are, you know, I'm so thankful to them, are trying to do this great work to help us understand a little bit more about, you know, these disease. And now we know that, you know, we pretty much have proof there's persisters, which is wonderful, you know. And she, we changed the antibiotics. I started, I think, one of my first, we sort of, she's layered them in, you know, as you can kind of manage them. I think I took minocycline for probably 8 months, but it started giving me headaches, so I had to stop that. Clarithromycin, Ceftin, some herbals, and obviously LDN still. And then I talked to her about methylene blue, and I decided to do methylene blue. And I've got to be honest, I took methylene blue, I think it was, I started on 50 of liposomal. You know, I already felt not too bad, not, you know, not wonderful, but not really awful. And it absolutely blew the lid off everything. Just this, you know, consecutive dose.
Meaning you became extremely symptomatic?
I had like a giant Herxheimer reaction. Everything became inflamed. I was back on the sofa again. And so we really slowed it down. She was like, you know, I really don't want you to be feeling like that. We can treat this. And I think this is another thing that we all have to bear in mind. I personally think you have to get a little bit sick and then you see improvement, but my doctor will try to limit that as much as she can, you know, using the detox methods, you know, binders and whatever else we use, and also, you know, layering it in so you're coping with it. And so she got me to back down to, I'm the type of person, I want to really attack it, you know, go in 100%. So she always has to like rein me back a little bit. So I started at 10 with that and kind of gradually increased. So now I'm on about 125 with that, and I will get to 100 in the morning and 100 in the evening.
Of what?
Methylene blue.
Oh, methylene. Okay, so 100 milligrams twice a day?
Yes.
Okay.
My current medications are clarithromycin, Ceftin, Alinea, which is a tricky one to get hold of, but I found a very convoluted way to get hold of that medication. But I'm taking those three antibiotics plus methylene blue, cryptolapis, because I wanted to stop nidazole, and knotweed, and then some other supplements, and methylene blue. And I am really good.
And the Alinea, you're getting that from Canada, or which country?
Yeah, I'm going via Canada to India.
Okay, I know.
So it's like
the things we have to do, right?
Yeah, because it's like $2,000 for, yeah.
I'm getting it for like around 100 a month.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm always happy to share if anybody reaches out and they want to know how I'm doing that.
So just a minute ago you mentioned, and I think it's really important to kind of touch back on it, is that, you know, we all experience this Herx reaction, which can be horrible. And like you mentioned, you know, you wanted to go full bore in, you kill everything. And a lot of people do that, you know, they struggle for years to get a diagnosis and then they just want to kill, kill, kill. And you could kill yourself, right? Like, and so I know initially my doctor that treated my Lyme before I relocated and met Dr. Carlfelt, he wasn't so much, I mean, he would like, you know, push some magnesium and stuff when I was really having a Herx, but we didn't really back off a lot. And one thing I noticed with Dr. Karlfeldt is that he doesn't want you to be miserable. And I do agree you need to get a little bit sick so you can get a little bit better. But if you're out there and you're dying as you're killing this stuff, it's okay to back off. You need to kind of figure out something that works for you. You know, maybe you're not detoxing enough or taking enough binders or whatever it may be, but you don't need to kill yourself to get better. That I can promise you.
No, you don't. And you're right. It's really hard to have that patience because we're all mourning that life that we had before this illness, you know, took everything away from us. So you're desperate to get better.
Yes.
But I think all the best doctors know that we need to sort of slow it down when we need to.
We do. And you know, one of the crazy things is that I remember Dr. K had me on Cystis T, which I did fantastic with for months.
As well, actually, for a little bit.
And I went out of town feeling amazing. And it was over the weekend and I crashed. Like, I thought I was dying. And I got a hold of his phone number. I texted him. I'm like, I'm out of town and I'm dead. And he's like, quit the tea. And I'm like, just quit it. He goes, just quit it. I'm like, okay. And a couple of days later, I felt so much better. So you don't kill yourself.
No, that sister's tea is some powerful stuff.
Oh, you are telling me. But it was so crazy how I did it like 3 or 4 times a day for several months. And I didn't feel anything. I did not feel anything. But then just all of a sudden, it just hit me. And I mean, I turn a lot of people on to Cystis tea, but I'm like, go super slow, like a quarter teaspoon, right, like a half a cup a day. And because that in cemento will like sneak up on you and you think you're dying.
Yeah. And bite you.
Yeah. And that's the thing is that you can, I mean, like you're saying, you're mourning your old self and you're mourning your old life and you want to kind of do whatever you can just to get back there. But you can still can achieve tremendous impact on your disease, even though you don't have to go through all these huge Parkheimer reactions. Yeah.
Right. I think we can actually delay our healing process, I think, by making us get so sick or killing too fast and not backing off. I think it can do more damage than good. So slow and steady is the process.
Slow and steady wins the race.
Right? Yes.
We want to be the tortoise in this, not the rabbit.
Yeah. And you have the emotional trauma of what you're going through as well. I mean, the impact, like you're mentioning, on the family impact. And so all of that accumulates as well if you hit it too hard.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly has impacted my daughter's mental health, you know. And of course she had COVID as well, but, you know, my son as well, but my daughter was more affected. She's younger, you know, and she told one of her friends at school she thought I was dying, and so the parents called us and said, look, you know, we know you're so poorly, but we wanted you to know that she has said this, you know. And it was also, she was old enough because they were in middle school, 6th and 8th I think at the time, and that they knew that the doctors were, you know, fobbing us off, so they could see like nobody was helping. It was terrible. I mean, medical gaslighting is, you know, a really terrible thing, and particularly for women. You know, this particular doctor, when I can't believe, you know, you can't get a sicker person coming through your door, was suggesting I, you know, take some Xanax. My husband did drop an F-bomb, I have to say, and he said, you know, for F-bomb's sake, I'm wheeling her in a wheelchair. Like, what's going on here?
And all you need is a Xanax to fix it.
Yeah.
Just take some Xanax.
It's amazing. It's a wonder drug. It's like Windex.
Exactly. You know, magical Xanax. If only it was that simple. I do think that I've also done some other things that I forgot to mention. Like early on with the disease process in 2018, I did 6 months of high dose vitamin C, glutathione. I also had to do, they tested, you know, metals, and I did 40 coletions. and brought that down. I think it was lead, and apparently a lot of English people have high lead, but I had lead, and I think it's the old houses maybe, you know, in the paint in the walls, but I had lead, and I can't remember the other one, but I did chelation. My doctors are marvelous in that they actually take insurance, which, you know, is rare because it's, you know, difficult for doctors to be able to do that. But my doctor who runs the practice, and there's more and more doctors now, there's like six of them, and they're just opening an office in Westwood in LA too. She had Lyme disease, you know, and I think this is why we're now getting so many wonderful doctors like yourself that are touched by family members or themselves. You know, they realize the absolute BS that is going on around this disease. And it's sort of like a grassroots movement now. You know, people are not accepting it. We're starting to, you know, not have medical gaslighting. And I'm hopeful that things are beginning to change.
Yeah, and I think it's platforms like this, this social media platforms, all of these are really bringing people together and becoming more of a force and putting more pressure on the medical profession as to how they need to perform better.
Absolutely. Yes. You know, and legally, as soon as, you know, cases are won, which seems to be happening, you know, that puts pressure on the insurance companies, you know, not to take away medication when we need it. I do think, talking about like different treatment modalities, that for some people, they seem to get well with herbals alone. I, hand on heart, do not think that was going to be my story. I'm hoping it will be my long-term story.
Yeah. And you know, I think a lot of people, I think a lot of people will start out with antibiotics and then switch over to herbs, or some people will do them hand in hand. And, you know, we all know that there's not one thing that works for everyone. So whatever it is that works for you, go for it. If you're going to do the antibiotics, make sure you're protecting your gut, because then you know, it's like taking a pill and then you get all these other problems that come from it.
And that has been something I've had to kind of really work through with my doctor, you know, and it was a concern for her. I've got quite a sort of supportive gut regime.
That's good. I'm glad that they're recognizing that. Yeah.
That for sure. But you're right. It is. Otherwise you're going to end up with C. diff, you know, and another set of problems.
Yeah. But I can honestly say during my, undiagnosed for 7 years and then 6 years of treatment, I never took a single antibiotic. I think initially it was because, one, the Western medicine field left me for dead for 7 years. Yeah, for sure. And so I didn't have a lot of confidence in them taking something that they were going to prescribe me. And two, I was so sick. I thought this IV antibiotic, I thought it was going to kill me. I really thought it was going to kill me. I didn't know anything about herbs or any natural treatment, but I went with my gut and went that route because I just didn't think I was strong enough to handle an antibiotic. So it worked for me, and I know a lot of people do get by without antibiotics. So, but it's just whatever works for you.
That's right. And I think that, you know, I'm so glad that you are so well. So yay for you.
Yay. Thank you.
I totally think, you know, we have to. My daughter, actually, FYI, she also tests positive. I got a call from my doctor, kind of checked the whole family, and my son tested positive for Bartonella, and my daughter tested positive for Lyme and Bartonella. You know, I got a call from public health, like, do you know you and your daughter are positive for Lyme disease? I'm like, a bit late for me. For years I have been. So, you know, we don't fully understand why that is. You know, we think maybe we were camping on like a nest of ticks or something, but we don't really know. You know, did I have it all my life? And I never saw a bite, you know, which a lot of us
did. Did you have it and pass it to her in utero? Like, there's so many, there's so many things we don't know, because, you know, and that's going back to what you mentioned before. So you got in remission once, you were in remission for a year, and then just the emotional trauma that you went through, and you had a lot going on.
Right.
I think it's important for the listeners to know that, you know, we all want to live a stress-free life, right? Stress-free, drama-free, all of that.
Yes.
But it seriously is so, so important for our healing. Obviously, look at you, you know, and I'm sure it was all that emotional trauma that just got to you again. So, you know, I know that there's, you know, a lot of people that have a lot of drama with their family going on when they're going through this journey. And part of it, I think, is because not everybody really believes us. You know, like you said, one day your arm hurts, the next day it feels fine, but your leg hurts. You know, it's right. kind of hard to believe those stories. I get that. Yes. So, you know, if your family is gaslighting you, you know, whatever it is, you need to get the toxicity out of your life. Or I think you're really going to struggle getting better. So whatever that means and looks for you, just know that that's a real thing.
You're absolutely right. And I think that's also a part of the healing. You need to find something in your life that helps you. So for me, it's walking my dog and being out in nature. And, you know, to begin with, I couldn't even stand up. But I kind of set myself small goals to achieve. Can I stand up and cook my kids breakfast? Can I walk around the block? And now I feel better. I daily take walks. I'm not very good at meditation, but I'm trying. You know, I've been learning some Kundalini yoga. And so I think, you know, what you're saying there is you have to find also ways to help yourself, you know, cope with life's challenges, because you can't control everything around you either.
Right. You know? Right. No, the world is not going to be perfect. But meditation or tapping or like there's so many things.
I'm grateful that I have my family, you know, were just in the same situation as me, really, and, you know, could see how sick I was, because that must be so sad for other Lyme people whose families do not support them and don't understand. I think that would be very difficult. Yeah, very isolating.
Yeah, there's been so many, from the stories that we've heard and, you know, patients, there have been so many broken up families just for that very reason, you know, that, you know, spouse does not understand. And it sounds, you know, silly. Well, today I'm fine. Like Tanya was saying, I'm fine today. And the next day, you know, I can't get out of bed. And then, you know, 3 days later, then it's like nothing happened. And then it's your leg. And then it's, I mean, so it sounds
crazy. Yeah, you sound like
you need Xanax.
Yeah. A hypochondriac, yeah. or that Munchausen, did something like that. Like something,
yes.
And especially when you're not getting any feedback or you haven't been diagnosed with Lyme yet, you know, so you begin to think you're losing your mind, you know, because I swear yesterday I couldn't walk on my leg, but today it's fine.
Yeah.
Exactly. Something's wrong with my head.
I know. Need that Xanax again.
Yeah, exactly. So working on kind of the emotional component, that obviously is huge. And then, like you mentioned, EFT, EMDR. And what's fascinating is that a lot of traumas, you know, sometimes when you hold on to traumas, you are more likely to get bugs that resonate with that trauma. Yeah, you know, so that you can have a trauma in your life, and maybe, yeah, because a lot of us we have Lyme bugs, we have Epstein-Barr, we got soups already, and then when we are then living in a life, you know, maybe we have a trauma event that we're not resolving, then we are then creating a kind of a frequency that some of these bugs resonate with and can really proliferate, and then by not addressing the trauma, it's hard then to address the pathogen.
Yes, I think that's absolutely spot on. I mean, I'm thankful that right now my son and daughter, even with my daughter having kind of in and out, not so much now, she's doing great now, she's going off to uni. I'm going to be an empty nester soon, but she, you know, she's doing great now actually, but neither of them have symptoms. But that speaks to the fact that you can live with this disease within your, you know, with these eco kind of, you know, little biological bugs, that pathogens that we have in us that we kind of have to almost get some kind of equilibrium with them, you know, and I think that's exactly right. Once you kind of get to that stress, out of control with the stress and other things, then, you know, the cracks show and then we start to get sick again.
We wear down ourselves. Yeah, exactly. Because I know, and I mean, I know firsthand. So I got bit in 2004, but I didn't have a single symptom until 2008. So for 4 years.
Well,
I got the bullseye rash. Unfortunately, I didn't know what it meant, but I got it. And I didn't get sick for 4 years, but I had recently gone through a divorce. I became a workaholic, and I think I just ran my body into the ground. And going back quite a few episodes ago, something kind of triggered in me. I think I had some emotional trauma going on too that didn't dawn on me until 15 years later that could have been part of it too. So yeah, just whatever is going on in your life, just wearing down your body, because I think so much of the population actually has Lyme disease. Their body's just able to keep it at bay.
That's what I think. I think,
yeah.
I mean, you know, I think we all think that. I read somewhere they said something like 14.something% of the world's population, and I'd say more than that.
You know, yeah. Well, and even what's sad is that, you know, you got the call from the CDC, I think you said, you know, that you have Lyme disease. Well, unfortunately, so many people aren't CDC positive, but they're super sick. And so, you know, the numbers aren't accurate. And even what the numbers that they have are very, very scary, but they're not accurate.
No, this actually, that call was not from the CDC test. My doctor, not many months ago, they run tests. I'm sure you do the same. They run tests every now and again, just to, I guess, help with insurance if that ever comes up. And I think, is it called the C6 peptide? Is that right? Have I got that right? What's the Lyme? Is a Lyme test peptide? I can't even remember, but it was not the Western blot. It was just another test to see if anything came up. And that picked it up. Maybe is it the Lysispot? I forgot what it's called.
Well, you have the ELISA test. Yeah.
Maybe it was just maybe it was that.
Okay.
And it was kind of like a feeler test, I suppose. We came back positive with that. So they called me on the back of that, and it was public health. She just said, I'm a nurse from like California public or LA public health, something like that. You know, I'm sorry to tell you've got Lyme disease. I was like, I don't even know how they.
Oh, really?
We're a little late. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think in regards to the people that have Lyme disease, I mean, I remember chatting with Dr. Klinghart, and this was many years ago. And he was saying, well, and I can't remember what kind of research or, what he relied on for this number, but he was saying that, about 80% of us are infected. And this obviously was many, many years ago. It probably would have been more than 10 years ago that when chatted with him, he made the statement.
Wow, 80%.
Yeah. So, and I'm sure the number is not less now, because I'm sure as, the ones infected have children the tick disease or ticks, it's not like they're getting less, and it's not like, they're less infections in them. We had somebody wrote a book, I can't remember the name of the book, but mentioning that the climate change really impacted the amount of infected ticks as well. So it just seems to be moving forward more and more. So to your point, we can't avoid the infection, so we have to establish a symbiotic relationship and then keep our emotional, physical health as strong as possible to be able to not be impacted, not become symptomatic with the disease.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, my doctor was trying to educate my daughter about that, and my son, that you have to. He did actually get sick after COVID either COVID or the COVID vaccination, we're not sure which, but he did get sick for about 6 or 7 weeks. But he managed to, sort of took some herbs, took some supplements, and he came to, being okay again. And that was a little lesson for him that he needs to take better care of himself. My doctor was trying to educate my daughter, you're going off to college, really direct. She was like, when you're tempted, she's going back to the UK actually for college. So she's like, when you're tempted to go out, and you're not feeling that great and you want to go out with your friends, don't. That's the day, you need to just give yourself some time, have some warm soup, and go out then in a couple of days when you feel better, and taking care of her body. And so she's going to take some like supportive herbs and supplements while she's, in the UK, and we hope for the best.
And what's great is that with you having gone through this journey, you know, she has this wealth of amount of knowledge as to what she can do, you know, the different tools that are available to her and also to your son, obviously, and they can lean on that, you know, which is great.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, I think hopefully, you know, teenagers are teenagers at the end of the day, but, you know, they both eat reasonably well. So, you know, as best as they're doing as best as they can, I guess, right now.
Yeah. Right. And they'll probably always have that visual of, you know, their mom being really, really sick. So,
right.
You know, like your son, you know, had some issues and then got better. Sometimes we need that little scare or that little wake up call to be like, okay, I could very easily, you know, end up like my mom, like my, you
mom.
Know,
right.
Yeah. So
for sure.
It's a hard lesson, but
I said earlier that I didn't have a bullseye, but I did before I got acutely sick, have a red patch on my face. So I still don't know if, you know, because I remember at one point we thought it might be lupus, you know, the butterfly rash. So I don't know if that was like some kind of bug bite, you know.
Right.
Because obviously the bullseye is not always a bullseye anyway. I know many people don't see it, but that could have been it.
Yeah, and most people don't get them. I was one of the lucky few that got it. And I saw it because, I mean, I threw all the covers off my bed. I thought there for sure was a spider in my bed that I just got bit by. But I had no idea what I was in store
for.
No,
sorry.
And that's one of the reasons why I keep advocating and educating for Lyme disease,
well,
because that could have saved me 13 years of misery if I would have known what that meant.
Yeah, it's, you know, all we can do is kind of keep giving back like we all are and trying to help other people. And, you know, it's just I think it's just becoming a big movement now.
Yes. Yeah,
which is great, what we need. Well, thank you so much.
This was
amazing. Yeah. So thank you for what you're doing, the support you're giving to the Lyme community. All the people that reached out to you, and you can kind of assist them in so many different ways. And that's what people need when they're middle of this.
Yes.
They just need to know that I fully believe you can get better. You know, doctors like yourself can offer different ways of us healing. You don't have to do the antibiotic route. Like, you know, you've successfully, you know, healed without antibiotics. I know my doctor helps people without antibiotics. It was right for me, but I do believe we can all heal.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Thank you both very much.
Great.
Thank you so much for sharing with us, and stay healthy.
Yes, you too. I'm sending you good juju vibes.
Good. We'll take it.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Bye. Bye-bye.
Information this podcast is for educational purposes only and is not designed to diagnose or treat any disease. I hope this podcast impacted you as it did me. Please subscribe so that you can be notified when new episodes are released. There are some excellent shows coming up that you do not want to miss. If you're enjoying these podcasts, please take a moment to write a review, and please don't keep this information to yourself. Share them with your family and friends. You never know what piece of information that will transform their lives. For past episodes and powerful information on how to conquer Lyme, go to integrativelymesolutions.com, and an additional powerful resource, limestream.com. For Lyme support and group discussions, join Tanya on Facebook at Lyme Conquerors Mentoring Lyme Warriors. If you'd like to know more about the cutting-edge integrative Lyme therapies my center offers, please visit thecarlfeldcenter.com. Thank you for spending this time with us, and I hope to see you at our next episode of Integrative Lyme Solutions with Dr. Carlfeld.